cliffcentral.com. Good night and joy
be with you all. Yeah, this guy gets more girls than you do. So you want to mock him?
Wow.
Pretty dreadful song.
Yeah. Thanks for not mincing your words, because you said what we're all thinking.
Yeah, but you know, people ask you to sing songs, that's what happens.
Mm-mm.
You know, his life isn't all easy. It isn't all just chicks and rock concerts.
Mm-mm.
He has to sing songs like that for people who clearly have lost loved ones. Yeah, so Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist, that's coming up in a couple of minutes. But there's a couple other things I want to share with you before we get to that. It's been a really cool week. Gareth will be back, as per usual, Monday. Okay, so from Monday, it'll be the Gareth Cliff Show, as per usual. We'll go back to our usual roles, but it's been great having you listen to us through this week. Thank you for all the messages, all the interactions. It's very, very cool. I know my buddies enjoyed it. Sia's been here and there, but for everyone, thank you. This heartfelt thanks is brought to you by a moment of me just being, well, it's Friday, I'm happy. We've got a message from, you know, the rainbow kiss.
Mm.
Yep. People are looking it up and they're going, that is just disgusting.
Mm.
Fair enough. It is. It's nasty. It's not for the faint hearted. I wouldn't look it up. Your Friday deserves things better than looking up rainbow kiss.
There we go.
Which means you're not doing it right now. And you're going, oh, that's disgusting. No. And then I'll say, yeah, I told you it was disgusting.
I'm going to take your word for it and I'm not going to Google.
So getting back into these things where we try to find the excuse, the truth behind it. Do you want circumcision, engagement ring, divorce, or internship?
Engagement ring.
You want to hear the real story behind engagement
rings? I want to hear how the scam began exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if you haven't been listening the whole week, we've just been getting sort of lowdown now. This guy, Adam Conover, I think his name is. Adam Conover. He does a series. It must be his only job, because every look on YouTube, there's thousands of these things and they're pretty well done. So here is the real story behind the engagement ring. No, it's true.
Ah,
go away.
Ben. Just Brenda Fassi, not Ed Sheeran.
Go away, Ed Sheeran. Damn you.
You've made me the happiest man in the world. Emily, will you marry me?
How sweet. You like it, so you're putting a ring on it. But have you ever wondered why we put diamond rings on things we like at all?
Oh, God, you're going to tell us the awful truth about engagement rings, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Hi, I'm Adam Conover.
Hey, Adam.
And you may think of the diamond engagement ring as a timeless symbol of love, but it turns out this ancient tradition was invented less than a century ago by the De Beers Diamond Corporation. Before the 1930s, nobody exchanged diamond rings when they got engaged. It wasn't a thing.
Apple, what do you say we get married?
Oh, that's a swell idea, Frank. What do you give me?
Well, I got the shiny red apple.
Sold. Oh, I love you, Frank.
But in 1938, the De Beers Diamond Cartel launched a massive ad campaign, claiming that the only way for a real man to show his love is with an expensive hunk of crystallized carbon. And we bought that shit.
Now, hold on. Looks like if I don't buy you one of these ring dealies, then I'm a tiny peck of pencil neck.
Well, it's on the side of a building, so it's gotta be true.
Well, crumbs.
In fact, every element of the traditional American engagement was designed to make more money for De Beers. How much a drop on that rock?
I don't know, like $4,000.
Jesus, Louise, that's more than your car.
My dad said the rule was 2 months' salary.
Yeah, sorry, dude. That's not a rule. That's just an arbitrary number from an old De Beers ad campaign.
Buy her a diamond worth 1 month's salary. She'll be sure to love you eternally.
Ah, profits are down. Better make it 2 months.
This has gotta be the most successful ad campaign of all time. This is like if in 50 years, people were going,
oh, honey, the same thing again?
Yeah, you know that old rule. Pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening, pizza at supper time. When pizza's on a bagel, you must eat pizza all the time.
Well, it's not like I'm throwing my money away. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least the ring is worth something.
Yeah. Actually, diamonds are intrinsically worthless.
I refuse to believe that.
Well, maybe you believe De Beers chairman Nicky Oppenheimer, who once said, quote, diamonds are intrinsically worthless.
Shut up, shut up, shut up.
In fact, they're quite common. The only reason diamonds are even expensive is that De Beers has a global monopoly on diamond mining, and they artificially restrict the supply to jack the prices up. But in reality, those assholes have a fuck ton of them.
These are extremely rare. Pay no attention to that.
which means that diamond you just blew your savings on has virtually no resale value. That's why De Beers wants you to think a diamond is forever. If you never try to sell it, you'll never figure out how badly you got fucked.
Fine, so what do we do about it?
Nothing. They've got us by the balls. A century of advertising has embedded the idea of a diamond engagement ring so deeply in our culture that even knowing all that doesn't get you out of buying an engagement ring. Seriously, give it a shot.
Okay. Emily, will you marry me? I'm not giving you a ring because the concept of engagement ring is a scam on the part of the De Beers Corporation.
Yes.
But we could open a joint checking account?
Sorry, dude. I want that rock.
Fuck! Well, thanks, man.
No problem. Join me next time on Adam Ruins Life's Greatest Pleasures when I'll be talking about how puppies only pretend to love you in order to mooch off your food supply.
Oh, that is so true, though, huh? But, like, can you imagine the meeting? You know what? We've got diamonds. What can we do with them? Well, nobody really needs a diamond, do they? Ah, what do people do? They get married. Genius, huh?
That is genius, though.
Absolute
shit.
Genius.
And I can't believe that it's less than 100 years old, the engagement ring.
Yeah, 1930s.
And then that's like yesterday only that it became a thing.
1930s. Now, there's other clips as well. I'll give them to Gareth if he wants to play them about why weddings are a ripoff.
Oh, that's going to be a good one.
There's also one about why divorce is really good. Do we got time for that?
Yeah.
Let's have a go with the divorce one. You know, this whole week I've been saying that, you know, you can question pretty much anything in life, and not to the point where you become anal and just don't ever want to go with anything. Mm-hmm. But there is just so much out there that someone just basically manipulated, and we as sheep have then taken it forward from there. So this is why divorce is actually a good thing.
God, society is going to crumble. People will eat each other. We're going to have to celebrate two Christmases.
Murph, calm down. Divorce isn't scary. In fact, it's a good thing.
Are you serious, dude? Half of all marriages end in divorce.
Oh, yeah, that's what everyone says, but it's not actually true. Oh, hey, a dance circle. Properly calculated, divorce rates in the U.S. have never exceeded 41%. And after peaking in the late 70s and early 80s, since then, the divorce rate has actually gone down.
So what? Divorce is still awful.
Why do you think that?
Because it means a happy marriage is over.
No, it means a bad marriage is over. And before access to divorce improved in the 70s, people were trapped in those awful relationships.
In the old days, to get a divorce, you often needed both spouses present.
My husband is trying to kill me.
And where is this husband?
Knife shopping.
No dice.
You also needed to establish fault. So if you wanted a boring old amicable divorce, you were forced to lie to a judge.
Who was cruel or inhumane to whom?
Damn. It was me. I attacked him with scissors.
Ah, yes, dice. Divorce horse, do your thing.
Let's go!
And this was particularly bad for women, because in many states, domestic violence wasn't considered grounds for divorce, so they could become trapped in abusive marriages. But all that changed in 1969, thanks to Ronald Reagan.
As governor of California, I introduced no-fault divorce, a revolutionary innovation that made it far easier for folks to separate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this marriage!
The concept soon spread to other states, and by some estimates, reduced cases of female suicide by 20%. Wow. That's why divorce rates rose in the 70s, not because society was crumbling, but because divorce was finally available to the people who really needed it.
Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Sheep, there's been some strange laws that have just gone and people have suffered. You imagine that you couldn't get a divorce if your husband was beating you.
Jeez.
If he didn't want to, that'd be it. Done.
I'm actually amazed that humans are still around, considering
Ronald Reagan got in there, huh?
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan.
Listen, I am glad I was not born a year, 10 years, 20 years before or after. Like, I really do think these are the best times ever. And I'm not complaining at all.
Exactly. And the best times always are a Friday. And that's where we are right now. So we're going to leave you with Gareth chatting with Andre, the hilarious hypnotist. Gareth will be back on Monday this coming week. Mabali, you will not be here this coming Monday.
No, I will not.
Okay.
At some stage, so we'll see you on Wednesday.
Because we're not doing the show on Tuesday. Look, at some stage, we'll all be here again. But hey,
Wednesday.
The podcast, Wednesday. Let's give it a go. We'll see you back then. But yeah, stay on with Gareth and his interview with Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist. Have a great weekend.
Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist has been a part of South Africa's entertainment scene for years. And I don't mean that as some kind of an insult. I mean it as a compliment.
It is a compliment. Thank you. It is. It's been years.
People love you, but you know, I mean, everybody knows who you are.
Yes. I qualify myself as the most unrecognized celeb in the country. There's not a person that doesn't know who Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist is, and yet nobody knows what I look like.
That's the funny thing. Right, because either they're hypnotized at the time that it happens, or they're watching the people who you've hypnotized and they're not really paying attention to you. It's almost as if you are coordinating and orchestrating the whole show.
Yes,
but
yes.
You're not the star, even though you are.
Absolutely.
You're the only one on that stage who's being paid.
Yes. That I always say that as long as I get the money and I'll put my name on the poster and I'll take the money. The rest of this, and I've always kind of lived by that rule that the volunteers are the stars of the show. Otherwise, the minute you start taking that God complex where I am the God and you are the volunteer, then you're going to lose the show in any case.
But isn't there a bit of a God complex when you're hypnotizing people?
You know, we I've got to kind of be careful because I'm seeing rocks being thrown in my direction already.
I don't mean that.
No, not in a bad way. A lot of hypnotists, I do honestly think, do have a bit of a God complex.
Really?
They do, yes. I come out of an entertainment background. I was always going to read the news. I was waiting for the newsreader that recently retired. And
yeah, I mean, you started with drama.
I did,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, radio.
Drama, the training all my life. I qualified in drama. Drama teacher, so theater was a given. It was not hypnosis was the surprise. It was one show and it was it. It was like I knew what I had to go do.
And how did you were going to tell me about the God complex and other?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you see, what happens is a lot of people think that when you're hypnotized, you or when you're a hypnotist, you have these awesome powers. And it's also when people go study hypnosis and they brand new in it, it does give you a little bit of a sense of I am in control, and you are my slave. It does do. I wouldn't lie. I mean, when I was much younger, it was a lot of fun.
When did you start the hypnosis?
I started actively doing hypnosis in the Defence Force. I was in the entertainment unit stationed in Pretoria, and we used to entertain the troops on the border. And that was my kind of grounding. That's where I got most of my exposure. And then in 1994, I hit the circuit, Victory Theatre, and Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist
quite a
was
good
born.
Year for new things.
Yes, it was. It was a year of many changes, and Andre the Hypnotist was born. It was the first year Rocky Horror Show was allowed on stage as well. And I followed Rocky Horror.
Jeez.
So,
can we talk about the hypnosis first? I want to talk about your career and kind of where you came from and all the things that you've done quite apart from the hypnosis. But I need to get these things figured out in my head. I don't know a lot about it. I know a little bit about hypnotherapy.
Yes.
I know that it's not everyone is susceptible to it. I know that it really has to do with kind of focus and clarity and almost, I suppose, a sense of calm.
Yes.
And being able to clear out all the noise.
Yes, correct.
So in some ways, it's almost like meditation.
It is meditation. It's guided, a guided meditation. It's guided daydreaming. It's so common. It's advertising. It happens so often that most people don't know that they're hypnotized, and that's why it's such an effective medium. So when you get it up on stage, you get it as a very visual platform, but that's not hypnosis, that is using hypnosis in order to get a result. The same way an advertiser would use hypnosis in order to sell a product.
So how do you know if someone's in a hypnotic state?
Well, there's several signals that actually take place in your brain. But now, once again, a person has to distinguish between waking hypnosis and sleeping hypnosis. Now, the sleeping hypnosis is what the stage hypnotists play on. Sleep, you're out, you're lying on the couch. The waking hypnosis is something as stupid as a TV ad, and you end up buying the product. The ad was in your lounge, you watched it, that guy had no permission to be there, and you go buy a vacuum cleaner. That's the exact same state of mind, the exact same brainwave, the exact same responses, everything, except nobody calls it hypnosis when it's in that format.
Isn't that manipulative?
It is, but that's, I think the world is always been that way. It's you know, it's become more, you know, we can see it. When I started performing in 1994, hypnosis was a control thing. I could say sleep and people would fall asleep in the audience. You know, it was just the heaps of people everywhere. They were just dropping like flies. Now, these days, doing hypnosis is a far more challenging career.
Why? Because there's so much of it?
Because they're exposed to that brainwave, that state of mind so often that they don't equate the state that they're feeling with hypnosis, because they're going, gee, but I know what I'm doing. Gee, I can, you know, go against the hypnotist if I really wanted to. I could wake myself up.
How will I know if I'm in a hypnotic state or not?
In normal everyday hypnosis, you wouldn't know. We none of us do. If I said to you right now, don't think of a pink elephant, first thought you do is that of a pink elephant. Yeah. And that's a basic state of hypnosis. It's basic manipulation of the mind in order to get a result. And it's most normal state, you won't know. If you're on stage, there are certain things that'll happen that I look for, because I'm going to get you to do things. So I need you to respond. One of them is twitching eyelids, rapid eye movement, which you get on stage and when you're sleeping. The second one is that kind of like that dead body reaction where they just flop all over the stage, slow, deep breathing. One of the interesting things that comes back is when you touch a child, a baby, on their feet, their toes tip forward. Now, when you touch an adult that's hypnotized on their feet, their toes tip forward again. Really? So that's like a response that comes back, yeah.
Why is it that some people aren't as susceptible to hypnosis?
It's the format in which the hypnosis is presented. We're all hypnotizable, but not all will go under with a therapist, not all will go under stage hypnosis, but we'll all be influenced to some degree and not call it hypnosis. So we would be likely to buy the product, see the show, partake in the discussion without actually realizing that we were hypnotized into following that doctrine.
Is it easy for people to slip into this state, and what's the best way for? Can you learn to do it to yourself?
Yes. Self-hypnosis, very big. Once again, as you say, meditation, it's nothing more than guided self-hypnosis. If you can do meditation, you're actually a pretty crappy volunteer on stage. Because,
really?
Yeah, because they do it so often, and they're in that state so naturally that they maintain all their control, and they become difficult to get to do stupid things.
I mean, everybody always thinks it's stupid things, but it can be tremendously beneficial.
It does. It has that side to it as well. It definitely does.
Because, I mean, we all know the benefits of meditation.
Yes.
It helps you unclutter your mind. It helps you get focused. It helps you to relax.
Yes.
There's lots of that stuff. So
when
you do it, what are the techniques that you could do to hypnotize yourself?
When you do self-hypnosis, it's exactly the same process that I do up on stage. It's physically focusing on a point, working your way down, imagining your body relaxing, and just basically allowing yourself to relax. Your brain would then move from the one brainwave to the next, from a alpha to a theta brainwave. It becomes much more slower, much more concentrated. And you're in a highly susceptible state. And you see this even when you daydream. When you daydream, and it's virtually like a reality. Your daydream is, you know, you give meaning to your daydream. It's like having dreams, you know, future dreams, if I can put it that way, ambitions. It's giving that power to that dream. Those are all the exact same state of hypnosis, but they never called hypnosis. Exact same brainwave.
Okay, so you said you have to focus on a physical point.
That's it, yes.
And you have to tell people to relax.
So you focus on a physical point. You close your eyes and you're busy just, and you relax yourself, starting slowly either from your toes or from your head. And you just visibly imagine yourself relaxing, all feelings leaving your body, etc., etc.
Why do people become so suggestible in this state?
Well, because in a theta wave, you become highly susceptible to suggestion. You're in a more acceptant state of mind. Now, what happens is if it's in a self-controlled state and you daydream, you're giving yourself those instructions in that own format. You're giving it to yourself, and we do this. We do it this way with negative self-talking, that type of situation as well. If, on the other hand, you're on stage, I become the operator giving the instruction. But you once again, one in the same situation. It's just with daydreaming, you you're creating. A good example, which I should mention, is that DVD, The Secret, that everybody watched.
And
They missed the point in as far as they would say, oh no, you just think and therefore it happens. It's the daydreaming creates the reality, because you're still feeding yourself the suggestions. And just by thinking that you feel sick or you look sick or, you know, all those, they all manifest in real formats.
Have you ever had a situation where there was someone who you thought you had hypnotized, but they weren't?
Yes.
So it's not 100% every time.
You know what happens? A lot of the people on the stage don't think they're hypnotized. And that is because the expectancy of what hypnosis is so different from what it really is. So people come up on stage expecting to be in a comatose situation.
They also think it's magic, right?
They do. And I live in a country where it's extremely filled with suspicion. And
people think that you're practicing black arts.
I'm the devil. I'm the devil. The Afrikaans are mensen.
Religious people have a problem with this stuff.
I do. You know, when I started this career and I was all, oh, I'm Andre the hypnotist. The first time, here I am. I'm now going to be the hypnotist, you know, packing it on. And the first person I ever ran into said, it's the devil stuff, you know, you're
really
a devil. We used to have people petition outside the theaters in the beginning years. People used to stand outside with these flyers and stuff and blast my car full of Bible verses. They were dead set against me. I was,
Why? Because your suggestions might work against their suggestions.
Of course, because we're
because
in the same industry.
Religion is hypnotizing.
Exactly the same.
You're hypnotizing a bunch of people. Mass hypnotism.
I was in Balcombe the other day, and there was one of these ministers, more old kind of old school minister, and he actually put on his Facebook page, and tells you how ministers are these days, and he put there that, you know, that some of the other ministers in Balcombe needs to take heed because they would have competition if I would change career.
Ooh.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, very true, very true.
How long did it take you to really learn how to do it properly?
I did it for about 4 to 5 years as an apprenticeship with Max Colley. So Max Colley was the hypnotist at the time that used to tour the country, and he was very famous.
Name.
Yeah, he was a fair barker, and as far as he was staunch and strict, and you wouldn't play on that stage. He was a miserable man, but a brilliant performer. And you know, when I say miserable, I don't mean personality-wise. He was one of those old-style hypnotists.
Yeah.
I say sleep, you blix him down, you know. And and I started with him, did an apprenticeship, because those days hypnosis was not considered something that you would do. It wasn't something the medical fraternity... No.
They didn't know that it had any benefits.
No, true. And they weren't ready for it. There was one or two people. There was a Dr. Louise Ulifir who did major investigation, and she started putting grounding into South Africa. But for the most part, nobody did anything.
I'm curious about how you figure it out, you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And then you turn it into your own kind of entertainment.
Because that's it.
For you, the hypnosis is just a part of a performance.
That's it, yes.
And a performance that you and whoever you bring up as a volunteer are part of.
Yes, yes.
Are there people who... they just immediately fall into this state and you know you can make them do ridiculous things and they will?
Yeah. This is where it gets so amazing about the career. People that are going to be hypnotized in my show already arrive theoretically hypnotized at my show.
So?
They, you know what, they're ready and they want to volunteer and they're just kind of sitting there just waiting to get going. And what people don't realize is these people are already hypnotized. They you say, I want volunteers, and somebody just raises their hand. He's already so susceptible to suggestion that he's theoretically already hypnotized.
Now, I've heard horror stories about women who've been hypnotized and been sexually taken advantage of and all this kind of thing.
Yes.
Is that possible?
You know what? I'd lie if I said no. It's not. It is possible, but it's taken within a different context.
You didn't teach Bill Cosby, though.
I didn't teach Bill Cosby. No, yeah, and there's a little bit of a kink. You see, you had to do the tablet thing. You didn't do the hypnosis. You know, you didn't get the hypnosis training.
I mean, it is kind of interesting because, you know, humans, it's like a superpower.
Yeah.
I'm not talking the idea that you could suggest to someone they must do something and they're technically your slave.
Yes.
Is a very appealing one to humans who want power over other humans.
Yeah.
There are limits to hypnosis.
Oh, a lot.
There's stuff like someone wouldn't do something under a hypnotic state that they would not do in
correct.
A totally conscious state.
That's correct, yeah.
Is that
yeah,
right? So yes. You can't make someone murder someone.
No.
If they
no.
wouldn't murder someone.
No, correct, correct. But you could change suggestions in order to suit your agenda.
Explain.
So Derren Brown is a great example of that. Derren Brown, yeah. The mentalist. Yeah. He's actually one of those first ones to hypnotize somebody to get them to go and shoot somebody else. What you do in therapy, for instance, is when you work with a therapeutic patient, you take away a systematic part of the control, if I can put it that way. So the person is rather dependent on the therapist. And they could be in a, call it a love type relationship with that therapist. And so when they're hypnotized, they might falsely believe that they are in love with the therapist and therefore they would perform the actions. So if you were able to swing the circumstances around to suit you better, or if that person was already inclined to do this without the help of hypnosis,
right.
you could then swing it to a negative.
Have you ever made anyone love you?
I have been single for 12 years. The last wife I woke up and sent back to Witbanker. Not again. No.
So. Okay, so where are you from?
I was born bred Joburg. I'm a Joburger of heart. Yeah, so.
And where did you go to school?
Studied in Roodepoort and then went off to university in Pretoria. Went and studied drama, teaching, and child psychology. Great ambitions in life, you know. I was going to change.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the people who want to go and study those things, you want to be a famous actor one day, or you want to change people's lives, you want to be winning awards and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But of course, in this country, there's only so much you can do with drama.
The theatre industry is a very difficult industry.
Yeah, or if you're lucky, you end up in a soap opera.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah, any soap operas out there.
But then you decided you're going to combine this with a bit of hypnotism, and then you've got an amazing show.
You know, it was instant. The night I saw Max Colley perform, I was in Pretoria, of all places, and he had like a quarter of an audience. There was like nobody at the venue. But the day I saw him perform, I had instantly decided that I'd found my career. I realized that day this was my career. Yeah, this was where I was going to go, and I changed. Before that, I was still fiddling with magic. I was going to vanish the Voortrekker Monument. I was David Copperfield, eat your heart out, you know. I was going to absolutely kill. And that never, you know, the day I saw hypnosis, I knew my career had arrived.
What about the issue of what you make people do? Because you have to be sure that what you're going to ask them to do or what you're going to suggest to them to do under hypnosis is going to be entertaining.
Yes.
So often you'll say to them, you know, sing a song you know, bark like a dog or whatever. I mean, those are the obvious ones that, you know,
come to mind.
All the cheesy stuff that you've heard a thousand times.
Yes.
But do you sit and every time you do a show, think of a new crazy trick to make them do?
You know what? It varies greatly. Last night, for instance, or this hot week, has been a very interesting week because two new suggestions were born. One of them involves a guy with a balloon turning his voice into helium, which is like a totally ridiculous routine, but it works like an absolute charm. But one of the popular...
So you would say to him, you've just sucked in a helium balloon, but it was a normal one.
We give him a normal balloon. And then we get him to sing happy birthday to somebody in the audience. And then he finds it's a combination of helium and laughing gas. And so he gets higher and higher the more often he, you know,
and
inhales.
What is it there that makes you think that that's true? How does it work chemically, mechanically, biologically? I don't understand.
You see, in theory, you still know everything you're doing. So if you're hypnotized, you're never in a comatose state. So the person's fully aware of what he's doing, but his brain starts acting as if what I said is right. So even though he's going, how am I acting like an idiot? His brain starts, it's like his nervous system and his muscles and all those things start acting as if it's true. So he starts talking
it's almost like you hijack the brain's command center.
I would say that was probably the best example of what hypnosis is. If I had to put it in a sentence, that would be hypnosis. Yes.
Do you ever hypnotize yourself just to get a really good sleep? Like a power nap?
No, you know what? I've been hypnotized. But I don't really...
Hypnotize yourself.
I've never really kind of ventured. When I was young, I did the self-hypnosis thing, and I was doing, you know, the positive guidance.
I believe it, because again, sleep is all about brainwaves too.
That's it, yes.
If you can enhance your own ability to get to deep sleep straight away, which, I mean, meditation helps you with that as well.
Yes.
That's stuff that could be beneficial to people.
Yes, yes.
I mean, even if you don't do it to yourself, it's something that might be really useful.
Well, yes, because once again, you're able to give yourself suggestion, which has an immediate effect. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what hypnosis does. And we do it on the stage show. I do give suggestions of positive
thoughts. You've been on the entertainment scene in South Africa for a long time, and I mean that in a complimentary way, because people are real fans. Do you feel you have to change the show every time?
You know what? The more you change the show, the more it stays the same.
Yeah.
It's now, once again, Max Colley, he used to say to me, why break something that's not broken?
Sure.
Why fix something that's not broken? It's the people enjoy what they see, and I try and come up with new stuff, but what I find is a lot of stuff become stale only because they no longer funny. For instance, I used to tell people to have a shower and they'd wash in between the legs and everywhere. That was a suggestion in the 1990s. Now that you wouldn't do that on stage. That's just so not PC, you know.
But how do you know how far to push it?
Yeah, the audience will tell you. Oh yes, they will tell you when they stop laughing, or because at the end of the day, I'm a comedian, except my material is sitting on stage, and I've got to be so careful. And
do you think that it's immoral to make people get naked?
Yes, but
would they do it?
Some would, if they by nature are inclined to take off their clothes. You know, if they would do it on a dare or when they were drunk or whatever, then there's not really a reason they wouldn't do it on stage. So what we would do is I've got male stripper in the show, and you know, I would just watch, and once we start seeing underpants, you quickly cut it down and stop the show. But if it was an audience, sometimes you get the audience and they're carrying the show, and you know, notice this is going south.
I love it.
Yes, yeah. Then you let a little bit more slip. You know, never complete nudity, obviously not. But you at the end of the day, you play for the audience.
And other hypnotists, are you guys in competition with each other? Are there? I mean, you're the top guy in the country.
Oh,
I don't think there's anyone else anyone knows about as well as they know you.
Yeah, yeah.
But are there others that do you get along? Is it sort of collegial or is it competitive?
Oh no, I think, you know what. In the years that I've been doing hypnosis, I've always stayed out of the politics of hypnosis. So I've met
there's
quite a few.
There's politics in hypnosis?
Oh, glory. Is there politics in something? Not non-politics. Everybody's got flippant politics about something, you know. And there's always that. You know, in the 1990s, 1997, I was arrested for doing hypnosis.
No.
I mean, there we go. There's some history.
What happened?
Well, you see, in South Africa, they tried to pass a law to prohibit the use of hypnosis on stage.
Did they call it like
some stage hypnosis law? And they actually...
Yeah, did they say that you were like practicing dark magic?
Well, it would affect people, permanently damage them mentally and physically, blah, 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 blah. It was a hell of a nice, long, well-written law.
But cigarettes weren't illegal, neither was alcohol.
No, none of those things were. And daydreaming wasn't illegal. Advertising was still completely legal.
Try and stop that, exactly.
Yeah, but don't you dare hypnotize anybody. And the law was actually passed in 1997, but in a much smaller format. Yes, it is. It's there, part of the medical law, the medical amendment of 1997, 12th December. So clear. And I was on my way to Bloemfontein, and I knew that if there was a place that I was going to get arrested, it was going to be Bloemfontein.
Yeah.
You know, it's you couldn't find a better place.
People are very conservative there, right?
Oh, yes. And they wait for the hypnotist, and, you know, and yeah, they did. And I was arrested for doing the shows. Won the court case.
It's ridiculous. And, how long did you spend in jail?
No, luckily, none. No time. I just had to report to the police, and the police were kind enough to come watch my show every night.
Oh, okay.
Until that was my kind of suspension, until the court found that.
But it's quite cool to have been arrested for that. In a way,
imagine,
it's kind of like free speech. And
yeah, of course, going out there. And
are people more likely to do what you tell them to under hypnosis if they're also drunk?
No, drunk people have a form of hypnosis of their own. They're actually damn irritating. They fall about. They do suggestions differently.
Have you ever had anyone who was high?
A lot
are
in
they
the
problem?
Years. No, not so much. They you know what? They don't stay under hypnosis because they fluctuate in brainwaves so often that they wake themselves up. So they're also not great volunteers. And in the 1994 area. career when I was on stage, it was the ecstasy days. We used to call my show the Lollipop Show because the theaters used to sell lollipops to accommodate the you know,
the druggies.
The druggies, yeah, yeah. Because yeah, that was the culture. So yeah, as scary as that sounds, they were sucking lollipops and popping E's and watching my show.
That sounds fantastic.
Whoa, what can we say?
I'm always really impressed by the fact that people who've had a long career like you have,
yeah,
you don't talk about it as much, you don't complain about it as much, but it's really kind of a lonely life a lot of the time.
It's very lonely.
Because you're staying in hotels.
Yeah.
You're flying on your own in economy class. There's nothing glamorous about that.
No.
You're doing your show. After your show, you just want to get out of there and go and have a sleep in your hotel room or eat something.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it's not as if you're complaining about it.
Yeah.
Because if you do talk about this, it's probably something you're allowed to complain about if you want to.
Yes.
But it's not what people think it is. Like,
no.
The entertainment world is really hard.
It's awful.
Right?
It's terrible. It's awful. And yes, so everything, every word you said there is true. This is year number 23. And I've kind of set my 25th as my final. Thereafter, Andre Delirious Hypnotist won't be touring anymore. It's, you know, because it is. It's soul destroying.
But that's going to be very sad when you stop.
He'll come back. He'll come back. He'll do two or three appearances, you know, maybe every 5 years till I'm dead. but it's...
Are you bored?
Not. I love the shows.
Yeah.
If I could sit in Joburg and perform at the Monte Casino every night of my life, I would do it with the greatest of pleasure. I'd love it. It's the touring that's killing me.
What kind of crowds are the best crowds?
You know what? Any audience of young people that come to have a good time makes a good show. People, especially people that don't want to prove hypnosis, we're on that stage of in society again where everybody they don't believe in hypnosis, so they want it proven. Last night there were two people that were complaining afterwards, like, yeah, but we don't know if it's real. And it's like, you're missing the point. I'm an entertainer.
Exactly. You've got to suspend disbelief. You know,
yes.
They go to a Superman movie and say, oh, people can't really fly.
Correct. Yes. It's a very good example. Thank you. I'll use that on them next time. Because it's annoying because you say, the idea is not... I'm not there to prove that hypnosis is real.
No.
I'm there to do a show. And trust me, when it goes wrong or when people don't go under, hell, then you get a different perspective.
But have you ever encountered someone who didn't go under, but they pretended to?
Oh,
so
yes.
That they could be part of the fun.
Yes.
And it almost ruins your show, I suppose.
What we do is, luckily, the audience, for the most part, they are very quick to split on somebody. So the audience would point them out.
And they
yeah. And then my sound technician that's been working on my show, has been working there for 10, 12 years, they will let me know very quickly, the sound guys, if there's somebody playing the fool. Because you can't always see, you know, you can oddly enough see in their reaction, because a hypnotized person is not going to act the same way that an actor is going to act.
Yeah, they're faking it.
Yes.
And the audience are being cheated and you're actually annoyed because now, you know, it's not the real thing, and that's why they came. They came to see the real thing. If they wanted to see actors, they'd ask for actors.
That's it. I'd have my own touring troupe. And it's just me. So,
what's the most embarrassing thing someone's done on stage?
Aziz in East London. I'm telling you the story that, you know, this one of the stories that I've never told the world. But I was in East London. I was performing at the theater. I used to tell people to do various things in the audience. So one runs out and he's you know, chasing a duck, and the other one's being Superman and Barbie. And I gave one guy a puppet and I said, make love to the puppet, as in kiss the damn thing. This was 1994. Oh, made God. Love didn't mean the same. Yeah. And as the show progressed, as the people returned, I did realize, there was one empty chair. Yes.
That must have been the worst.
You know what? I don't know who he was, and I've never seen him since. I've never run into him. We sold out the entire season. We were there
because of that guy.
Because of that guy. We were there for 3 weeks. East London sold out
and
in one day.
Was the puppet okay?
I looked a little therapy.
Worse for
all
word.
He needed was a bit of therapy. Yes, it was nasty.
Andre, what kind of other stuff do you incorporate in the show for people who haven't seen you?
Well, it's just hypnosis and comedy. So basically, you go out, you have a fun evening, you get to laugh at other people, maybe your best friend, maybe he volunteers and he becomes the star of the show. And then you go home and you've enjoyed it, you've had a good evening out. That's the magic.
Do you think the people who are scared of volunteering when you do this should just stop being silly and go ahead and enjoy it?
Yes.
Nothing's going to happen.
No.
You know,
no.
Nothing terrible is going to happen. You're not going to be chased out of your community because of what you do on stage with Andre the Hilarious Hypnotist.
No. Right? You know, number one is you're not going to get stuck in hypnosis. That's one of the favorite things. Number two is...
people not going to wake up.
Yeah, or they're worried about that. Hey, they still...
So how do you bring someone out of hypnosis?
You just say to them, wake up. And if I drop down dead, you just give them a good shake and they'll come out of it themselves. Okay. Your brain is consistently fully aware of what's going on. So it's still...
Because there are those movies where that's happened, right?
Of course. And that's where... And it wasn't uncommon in the 1900s. Hundreds for people to get stuck in hypnosis and for people to die. Yeah. Yes, as a matter of fact, in the 1940s, hypnotists used to use what they would call a donkey, which would be a stooge, and they would do all these miracles, put them between two chairs, hoist a weight on top of them, and super strong. And these people would die. The chair would break and impale the person.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we've got a history in hypnosis that's worth reading.
Wow. It's almost like you've inherited this arcane, bizarre, dangerous, you know, raft of knowledge from...
I wrote a book and...
Very ancient. Hypnosis.
Incredibly. It came up in the 1800s, and then it had several periods where it became unpopular. So it goes through those periods. But it started in the 1800s, and it's been going ever since. Now, these days, I think it's a far more understood science, but everybody still knows something about nothing. So everybody still comes up on stage trying to tell me what they know.
Any difference between young and old and hypnosis?
You know what? Last night we had a 96-year-old on stage hypnotized.
That is so dangerous.
Hey, I mean, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you never know.
Can you imagine?
She might die. She might need to pee.
Yes,
you know, things might happen.
Oh, you just say break dance, and it's real.
And she will actually break the dance.
Yes,
and herself.
It was amazing. She was brilliant because I did send her off, but she went under. She said she never thought that she'd be able to get hypnotized, and that's why she tried. And you know, it's a good riddance for her for being so brave.
Have you ever managed to ascertain what it feels like to be under hypnosis for the person who's having it practiced on them?
Well, yes, because I've been hypnotized. I've been put through the torture.
I've never been.
Well, in my case, I'm one of those. I'm a zombie. I'm the guy. We call them somnambulists. They're the dudes that completely pass out. You go. It's exactly the same as anesthetics. You 1 minute you're awake, 1 minute you're awake again. You know, that's literally.
And how much time can pass in between?
The 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours.
That's
yep. And wow. I actually had therapeutic hypnosis. I went while I was doing stage hypnosis. I actually went for therapeutic hypnosis, and
jeez,
out like a rock. I would be a stage hypnotist's dream. So.
That sounds so much fun. Now, you've been doing shows recently at Monte Cassino, right?
That's it. I'm at Monte Cassino. Yes.
And you said you scared us a little bit when you said, you're going to stop soon, take a break.
Yes.
So if you don't see Andre soon, you're not going to get to see him at all.
Yeah, well, they've got 2 more years left. We got to give Andre the hypnotist has to go in a cupboard for a while. He just needs a little bit of a break. So 25 years in the industry will be in 2 years' time, and I think that's a long time.
People will be upset. Watch.
Well, which is great. I appreciate it. You know, you appreciate your audience.
So you said that you've been single for 12 years. Kids?
It, yeah.
No.
Nothing. No. Chihuahuas.
What a fortunate thing. Imagine that responsibility.
No, it would have never worked. You can't. I don't think there's relationships.
Pets?
In two chihuahuas and a bunch of seahorses.
Seahorses.
Seahorses. I'm a passionate seahorse breed. Well, I wouldn't say breeder, keeper.
How many aquariums have you got?
I used to have six. I'm now currently down to only about three and two holding tanks, if I can put it that way.
How many seahorses?
There's currently just about 12 in the house, two to
what
two
a
per tank.
To do. But
I at one stage, I'm passionate about them. I used to be the, and I believe I still am. I'm kind of one of the most knowledgeable guys in this seahorse thing.
I didn't know this was possible.
Yeah, well, between that and then obviously I explore caves, which is the other side to the other weird side to my life.
Spelunking.
Yeah, that's.
So are you going down on ropes into caves with headlamps on and that's into tight little spaces? And
That's
terrifying.
I've been doing this about 30. I started when I was about 18. I went to Cirque Caves and I thought it was fascinating, and I've been crawling around caves. I actually own a property with a cave on it.
You're joking.
Yes, out there at Cradle of Humankind.
But you've got to be careful because of the bat dung, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because you can get the histo, but you only get that once. So histo is one of the... Yeah, most cavers would have it automatically just purely because they're exposed to the environment they're in.
What's the most difficult cave experience you had?
I think I got stuck in one.
Fear. Did you panic?
I didn't because it was luckily the cave on my own property, and it was a day before New Year, and tried to get out, and for whatever reason I'd done something wrong, and I wasn't getting out, and I'd run out of energy and I was jammed, and I just thought I'll sit it out. Luckily the cave on my property has
First of all, describe what part of you stuck in it, how far you're into it, whether there's light on the other side.
No, we're about four or five chambers further into the cave, so there's no contact with no surface contact. And I had these awful little torches that were just awful. The batteries were just running low, and I was down to last two. There were three of us, but two left early, which is, that was the whole thing. I said, don't worry, I'll make my way out, because I knew the cave so well. And so the two of them had to go, and they made their way out. We were kind of right behind them. Yeah, dumb move, very dumb move, because in speleology, you don't do that.
No. But, you must always have a team, right?
Yeah. And kind of stayed behind. And then when I got to the crevice that you have to climb up, I was just unable to get through this crevice. It just, it was, you know, you remember, I used to be a fat guy and a thin guy and a fat guy and a thin guy. Well, it was somewhere in my
fat. I remember
you
being
days.
Fat. I mean, I've probably seen about three of your shows.
Okay. Yeah. I weighed 174 kilograms.
Really?
Yeah, I got right up there.
How the hell did you lose that weight?
That's persistence.
Getting stuck in caves and then having to starve yourself.
Nothing like getting an article in the news.
So how did you get out of this hole?
So I was jammed in there, jammed, stuck, couldn't move, and I knew that I could get back down. Obviously, that wasn't what I wanted to do, because I would have to work my way back up again. This cave is 79 meters deep, so you know, and you're working your way along the side of a rift, and so I was.
Are you dangling, or
you've got your feet on rocks, and you're free climbing all the time.
God.
And I actually kind of decided, well, I would stick it out, and if I saw I wasn't, you know, I didn't have the energy, I would go down. And go to the water, get water, give myself a day or two in the cave, and then until I had enough power, you know, strength back in my body to get out. And luckily for me, some cavers were doing nothing the day, and they decided they wanted to go caving, couldn't find me, drove over to the property came and visited the cave illegally and came across me, because I was pretty much in the only exit. And so they, you know, got me rescued.
Have you ever had a party at the bottom of the cave?
No, not this cave.
Are they
hard
small?
Work. It's this cave's got, it's got about four rugby field sized, one room is about four rugby field sizes, filled with water. You know, it's a big cave. It's a big system.
Would you want to live down there if you could?
No.
I mean, in some way, it would be like having your own palace underground.
Can you imagine? You'll always be dirty. That's the thing. You know, caves aren't tourist caves, eh?
Yeah, muddy and smelly and
always. Yeah, and you've got water and the bats and so it's not. It's a distinct hobby. It's got very few followers because of the nature of the hobby. Obviously, it's.
Ever found anything interesting down there?
I haven't. I've discovered some interesting caves. The most recent one, this the Armageddon cave that was featured on television, etc. This new large cave system.
Which one is that?
It's large. Last year or the year before, they made an announcement of a cave out towards Randfontein area, just towards between Randfontein and Coltonville.
Isn't it interesting how underground in Johannesburg, this whole area, how porous the ground is.
Absolutely.
The dolomite, right?
It's dolomite, yes. We are an area that in the world that occupies the most residents on dolomite.
So. And that means that all these sinkholes you see, effectively, you don't know how big that cave could be underneath.
Correct. I mean, there was this one now last week in Daniel's Cale, which in the Northern Cape, which opened up. There's been several of them in the Carletonville and Surfentine area. They obviously, for cavers, they're not of much value because they tend to fall themselves, you know, close themselves up as they fall in.
But they tell you about how unusual our geography here is.
It is. We have a very unique country when it comes to the geology. It's the oldest continent touching the newest continent, etc.
This is amazing stuff. I mean, I'm just blown away. So we've learned that you've been in caves.
Yes.
You have a cave on your own property.
I do.
You are obviously into the hypnosis, but there's a certain limit that you will stop at.
Yes,
you're not one of those insane people who'll keep going. You've been single for a while and you have no children, which is very, very interesting because, I mean, there are more and more people deciding not to have kids these days.
Yeah.
You got the chihuahuas.
Yes.
Do they ever go to the caves?
Oh, they go to the farm, but they wouldn't do well in caves.
No, they wouldn't know how to get out, right?
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't even be able to move. I mean, caves is a lot of climbing, you know, so yeah.
But, well,
yeah,
listen, it's a pleasure to actually sit down and talk to you properly for
Fantastic.
The first time.
Yeah, it is the first
time. I can't believe in all these years it's the first time I've spoken to you.
No, it's good. It's good. We've only had
we get you in one morning and you can hypnotize everyone on the team.
Arrange it.
I'll give it a try.
All right. Good try. Good idea.
Awesome. Okay. Andre, thank you. Andre, the hilarious hypnotist. If people want to book tickets to your show at Monte Cassino, they can book them on CompuTicket. Get them ASAP. Yeah. Do not waste time because the man is not going to be out there forever doing these shows for you, all right? He wants a break as well.
Yeah, he needs one.
Thank you, Andre.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. CliffCentral.com.